They're trying to tell us something. They have figured out the formula for chaos.
When the clock strikes 8:30, babe, time to head for Chris's house.
Hey.
Will the sun make it to the next round?
Oh no.
Pot of thunder. Let's pot tonight. Come on, baby, let's pot tonight.
Woo!
Yes, the band's cooking tonight. Doc Gibbs and the Emerald Live Band is in the house.
Woo!
They still got it. Even after dying, Doc still got it.
Still got it.
Sounded better than ever.
Post-mortem, he still got it. You got the it factor, Doc Gibbs. But welcome to Pot of Thunder, the recognized symbol of excellence in rock and roll podcasting, brought to you by Blue Microphones. They look great. They sound even better. And you know me.
We have a podcast. Andy Jones produces it. He does a great job, except for when he fucks it up. And ALB shoots it deeper than anyone. ALB busts a nut just like a cinnamon bun. A cinnamon bun.
Wow. So fade out there. Yeah. Yes. You know me. It's your buddy Andy, America's little brother.
Woo.
With an excellent new intro with Chris on lead vocals. Who knew you had it in you?
I'm coming into my own as a vocalist. I'm giddy about it, as you can tell.
That's fair. Who did you say did a recent cover of that that's somewhat blown up?
Some country artist. Ah, I can't remember.
Interesting. I guess that's a crossover hit now, huh? Technically.
Oh yeah, it was a big one till that new that song by that totally unknown guy has become the biggest song in America.
Somehow I've not heard that, but I've seen the photo of that guy 100 times.
Yeah, I've not heard the song either, but
I'm sure it's a delight. But I'm not going to look for it. I don't care.
No, I'm not going to seek it out either.
I don't give a damn because we got business here. Here he comes, ladies and gentlemen. Entered the program. Nick, welcome to the show.
Good.
Sit down.
Good evening.
How are you?
All right. Did the same dances last week and it did not fall apart.
Last week, the cape fell apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think
now it's
the
been,
dance fell apart.
It's been mended and reinforced by your mom, so there's nothing. You could fire a bullet through that thing.
Did she use a sewing machine?
I think she did.
Wow. Yeah, hardcore. Yeah, it wasn't just a little hand stitch thing, huh?
No. Probably could have been.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, but she doesn't half-ass anything.
No, she doesn't.
Unlike her sons, she does things the right way.
Well, that's what happens when a parent does everything.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah,
the kids turn out like you guys.
Yeah, a couple of turds. Directly to Nick's left. You want him. We got him.
Every day, I can have it. Get out of my way, fuck you.
Woo. Put your hands together for the breakout star of the podcast medium. That is Chris L. We are Pot of Thunder. Welcome to the show. The hell's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah.
What month is it?
Well, it is not August.
No.
It is September.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is September!
We made it, guys. We made it.
I can't believe it's here already.
We've been talking about it for months, looking forward to it. And here we are, first week of September.
Couldn't be happier about this.
Now, if we remember back to last week, Chris said this is the most excited he's ever been about a song selection he has made during the 10-year run of Pot of Thunder.
That's still true.
Wow.
I'm talking about a sort of preconceived choice. And it might even ring true for the just the randoms that come out of the song generator, too.
Yeah, when you said it, I was thinking you meant most excited you've ever been about anything, including the song generator and everything
it
from the
might,
Kiss episodes and
it
all
might
time.
Be true of that. That might be also a true statement.
I want it to
pretty
be
pretty stoked
true.
About it.
I like when we have new firsts 10 years in.
And if you know, if they're not forthcoming, we have to find them, and here we are. So just to remind people, and also just to sort of set up the song choice. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nick or Andy. The subtle differences between February and September, but the February is more of a smooth, sophisticated approach to seduction, whereas September is more of like the primal horny, just animalistic horniness. Would you say that's an accurate description?
It's yeah, that's a vital ingredient this month, not necessarily in February.
I mean, it can be present in February.
Oh, absolutely. But it's not, it's an absolute requirement.
Yes.
During this month.
So it's like how a square can be a rectangle,
yes,
but not all rectangles are squares.
Something like
in
that.
In a way.
Well put, okay. Andy. Thank
Makes you. Sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this one definitely fits the bill. There's no question about it. I listened to it again this afternoon just to get myself ready. And
what was the context? Were you at home? Were you in the car?
I was at home.
At home.
I mean, yeah.
Headphones? Laptop?
No, just ran it off YouTube on my phone.
On your phone, yeah. Okay. Just wondering if there was something going on, or if you were at the gym or something.
No, yeah, just okay. Hit me and, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just hit play and I just felt even better about it, so.
Okay, so you haven't changed your mind.
Certainly not.
Certainly not, okay.
Now, this one's been brewing for almost a solid year since my baby's selection last September. Oh, wow. Which I felt great about.
That was a year already.
Yeah, it was soon after that when this one popped into my head, and I was like, this would be perfect for next year. So here we are, a year later.
Wow.
Crazy.
I'm excited. Nick, I see bags over there.
There are bags.
I don't see foil, but I see bags. Is that item baked?
Yes, indeed. Well,
so that's good enough for me.
Who wants to eat dainty? Who wants to eat baked treats with me? Oh, 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 oh.
It's like Andy landed the heel, as they call it, of the loaf.
Oh, look at that.
The pjuntki.
Yeah, it's a pound cake of sorts? No. Some type of
well,
bread.
Pumpkin's an aphrodisiac.
It sure is for
as
me.
We've talked about before.
Is it? Have we talked about that before?
Yeah.
I'm not
pumpkins give
that.
You a nice big boner. Said that on the back of my burpee seeds that I bought at Home Depot.
That explains a lot.
So yeah. This is a pumpkin bread with the bonus cream cheese layer.
This looks good. Did you try it?
Yeah.
Looks really good.
So we have a jar of mayonnaise that we were like, what are we going to do with this? And you can substitute it.
What are we going to do with it?
You can substitute it for
leads
eggs.
Me to believe that it was expired.
No,
that's
no.
What I'm worried about.
It's not, but we were looking through things and we're like, well,
you want to use it.
We want to use this before we forget about it and it okay. does expire.
Fair.
So no eggs in it, just mayonnaise substituted for it.
And you can't really taste that, right?
No.
Okay.
And the cream cheese has maple and a little bacon flavoring in there.
Bacon
as well.
Flavoring?
Bacon flavoring.
What the?
A little
Jesus
bit.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
Mm. How do you do that?
Bacon grease.
Bacon grease. My goodness. Take me to the grave. You have to roll me out of here. All right. Well, damn. I'm going to try it. It is pumpkin season. If it's September,
it's
September,
on.
Yeah. It's on, basically.
It is on. It got switched on last month, really. But
you started to see it popping up in the stores in August, but
you did.
Officially, it's on.
I mean, it's got to be at that right time in the calendar. I mean, there's only so much marketers can force down your throat mm-hmm. without it being completely unnatural. But when the football games start up and the temperature starts to drop, although we still get our share of 90 degree days into October.
We've got three of them next week.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The day this comes out, it should be pretty sweltering for a few hours.
It's going to be even more so when this song is unleashed on the populace.
Mm. All right,
well, feeling damn good about it.
I'm going to do my thing and wait until we start listening to the song and enjoy it as an overall experience, two senses at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know if I can handle both, to be honest.
Uh-oh. Wow.
I'm proceeding with caution here. So.
Okay. Well, is there anything you want to say or do or anything before we get into your selection?
Well, all the listeners now know what it is. I'll just, you know, drop these little nuggets before we bring out Jericho that... everybody definitely knows the artist. Okay. It's not somebody obscure. It's an icon of rock music. Hmm. But the song is from an album that was, I feel, largely overlooked. And I would definitely be stunned if either of you guys have heard this song. And I would guess that probably not many of our listeners have heard. I could be wrong about that part, but I would be bowled over if either of you guys have even heard of this song, much less heard it. But you're gonna be glad you did when it's over with.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to just real quick think who could this be.
Yeah, I have questions, but I'm not even gonna bother.
Yeah,
I'd say we just get into it.
I have
it
a feeling
I wouldn't
figure it out anyway. So
yeah, let's. I don't want to say peel off the Band-Aid. That implies some kind of negativity. But let's get to it right now. Let's turn the microphone over to Chris Jericho.
All right, Harold. This one's called...
Wanna Make Love.
Off of...
Outrider.
By the band...
Jimmy Page.
Ow!
Okay, you were right. Definitely know the artist. Do not know the album or the song.
Nick?
Around what year was this?
So this is his 1988 solo album.
Okay.
Not counting the Death Wish 2 soundtrack.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this from Death Wish 2?
This is his one and only solo outing, meaning that the Death Wish 2 is a soundtrack, so it may or may not qualify, but in terms of like just putting out an album of his own stuff, material, songs, I mean, I'm sure you had some co-writing credits with various people who were involved. This is his one and only solo album.
I don't know much as far as solo stuff goes. I know I've heard the Coverdale Page album. That's a good one.
You like that one, huh?
Yeah, I always thought so. I remember when it was in fairly heavy rotation on MTV. At least one video. I don't remember how many they released for it, but I had to look it up because there is a song that I really like off of that Death Wish soundtrack.
It's what is it?
Hypnotizing Ways, and in parentheses, what is it? Is it Oh Mama? Hold on, I'm waiting for the stupid commercial to get out of my way.
It's a good title. I thought it was just a bunch of weird dated synthesizer noises.
No, that one's actually a pretty good, like, I don't know, I guess just a swaggering rock song.
Hmm, okay.
Well, that's what this one is, too. And it kind of set the table for the Coverdale Page project, because you could totally, as we get into it, you could totally envision Coverdale performing this one.
So who is on vocal here?
All right, like, so here's the interesting thing about it is, like, so this album, to me, was kind of the template of what Slash and Jakey Lee did with their first solo albums. Jakey Lee's came out under the Red Dragon Cartel label, but that first Red Dragon Cartel album is essentially a Jake E. Lee solo album.
It's like four different vocalists.
Right, and the same thing that Slash did. So there are three different vocalists on here. One of them is Robert Plant, and it was kind of a reunion song they did, which is actually pretty fucking good. I think it's called The Other One.
The only one, it looks like. It looks like Jason Bonham's on the whole
Jason
album.
Jason Bonham is on the drums on the whole album. I actually saw this tour, and Jason Bonham was his touring drummer.
Where did you see it?
Joe Louis Arena.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big arena show when he came around for his solo tour. And it was also the general admission festival seating. We got there super early, and one of those deals... No lessons learned from the Who debacle in Cincinnati. They just threw the doors open. You just went running toward the stage. I was probably like four rows back.
So they had a line outside with all the doors locked and then just busted them open.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Terrible idea.
Yeah, just really bad idea. Yeah. Oh, well.
It's definitely a bad idea. But because of that,
I was at the Joe Louis Arena, too. That's a lot of running.
Yeah, big.
I mean, that's
full,
a big hockey
size. Yeah, home of the Red Wings.
Well, I guess you really earn it and get those front row spots.
Yeah, yeah. We got there early and got right up front. And that show was tied with when I saw Ace play at the Avalon for the most intoxicated I've ever seen somebody who also proceeded to nail the show. I mean,
Jimmy Page?
Page was, wow. He was literally drooling down the front of himself at points of the concert, but the performance was spot on and excellent. And, you know, threw in some Zeppelin covers. Final encore was Stairway to Heaven, and he let the crowd sing. There was, had no vocalist on that, and the crowd sang it. It was pretty awesome. But this song was in the set, and so he had Robert Plant vocals on The Only One. And then he had this like really husky voiced sounding guy, Chris Farlow, who did the vocals on all of Side 2, which are Hummingbird, Prison Blues, and Blues Anthem. And so the singer on the opening track, Wasting My Time, and then this one was a guy named John Miles, who is no longer with us, English rock singer, best known for his top three UK hit single Music in 1976.
Okay.
Don't know much else about him, but it's his vocal delivery, and I don't know if he wrote the lyrics here, but it's the vocal delivery and the lyrics that qualify this one 1,000% for September. But also the music is pretty cool, in my opinion. It's the over-the-top vocal performance that really gets me excited about this one.
Well, I'm excited to hear it. You know, you mentioned the thing about the festival seating where they open the doors and everyone runs in. I remember I went to a concert with Nick once when they did that, and Nick sprinted like you've never seen to get to the Carmel Corn Station before everyone.
Yeah, same vibe. You know.
Trampling all those in his path.
Yeah.
He wanted the fresh corn.
Gotta get it while it's hot. Mm-hmm. You don't want to stick to your teeth.
Mm-mm.
That was also a concert where people talk about it often, but rarely does it happen. It's more of an exaggeration. This actually happened. The opening band was, in fact, booed off the stage.
Mom, who was it?
They were called the Rock City Angels.
Good name. Well,
yeah, and they weren't that bad. They were kind of a GNR, kind of a sleazy rock band, but they for some reason, Jimmy Page attracted some rough crowds at the Joe during the 80s, because I also saw The Firm on their second tour there, and apparently there were multiple stabbings in the audience at that show. And then this one, the crowd was just not having it, and the singer got all antagonistic with the crowd, and it did not end well for the Rock City Angels. They were literally removed from the stage. Their handlers came out, pulled them off, and that was it.
So this would have been, what, 88 or 89, you said?
88.
So that's, I just looked up the Rock City Angels. That would have been a year after Johnny Depp quit the band as guitar player.
Wow.
I didn't know he, I had no idea he was even in the band.
So you're interesting.
Yeah, so you missed it by 1 year.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't, I would imagine they were a one and done band, but they were also on Geffen, which is the label that released Outrider. So that's how they ended up on the tour, but they were literally booed off the stage at the Joe. It's the first time I've, and I think only time I've ever seen,
yeah,
where they, you could tell they didn't finish their set. They just walked off in disgust.
They had a garden party situation.
Yeah. So that was another notable element of that show. Hmm. But yeah, this song was in the set.
Did the guitar player roll his amp off the stage?
Not that I could
see. Usually doesn't get that bad.
They had a road crew came out and handled it for
that's them, that's when you, yeah, hit bottom.
Yes. Yes.
When you're wrapping up your cord, your guitar cable.
And you're yeah, doing it like, you know how you very carefully. Yeah. Not wrapping it around your forearm. You're, yeah, oh, I got to do this.
The figure eight thing.
Uh-huh. That,
yes. Mm-hmm. Like as to not damage the, yeah, inner wiring.
You have to show off for all the... for all the techs,
all the nerds. Just buy another one, you dork.
Just break your cable.
Just break it. Who cares? Grow up. That's what they're for.
But before we get into it, though, as we talked about on the pre-show live stream, you know, people still clamor for one of our more famous segments, and I said I was going to use the year of release to get the material together. And I have something, so hit it.
Habemus papam.
Time for old stuff. Yay, that old stuff. Here's some old stuff. Time for old stuff.
All right, I'm not going to ask Nick who the Pope was. It's a pretty easy one, fairly recent, so just going to get right into it. In 1988, Pope John Paul II made his fourth visit to Africa, huh, and his 39th apostolic journey. The Pope made a 10-day tour that was scheduled to touch down in every country that bordered South Africa, while pointedly avoiding the country itself. His first stop was Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And there we go.
Fourth trip to Africa.
Sending a message to South Africa, going to every country around it, but not going there.
Well,
that's the passive aggression you expect from your Pope.
Well, I mean, Queen had no problem going there, but JP2... avoided it.
Queen did a show there?
Didn't they cross the apartheid, whatever you want to call it? Hmm. I think there was some sort of scandal about that.
I want to say that's right. Yeah.
Our friend Tom, not Tom Codal, who played in a band with me and Nick, went there and played a show. On TV there.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Where?
South Africa. Johannesburg.
Like, for real?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, like 5 years ago.
What?
With his band, The Circle View. I don't know what the hell they were, how they got invited and how this all worked, but yeah. I don't know.
How did the equipment get there?
I don't know. They probably just brought their guitars and maybe effects pedals or whatever. I don't know. Just backline, oh, the rest of it.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Big deal. But yeah. Tom crossed the apartheid.
oh, way to go.
Yeah, even though it was, what, 30 years later. Anyway.
A little more acceptable.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, there you go. And coincidentally, John Paul, Jimmy Page share the same initials.
There you go.
When you said JP2, there's in the Outrider artwork, there's a JP logo in a circle. So that's what made me think about.
Okay.
Similar initials, probably not similar views on supernatural entities.
Yes.
Between the two.
They both didn't buy Aleister Crowley's old mansion in England.
Jimmy Page still into that bullshit, or was that just a phase to freak people out?
I don't know.
Sammy Davis Jr. was into that. So I know. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I could see why you'd be interested. It's interesting. But I wonder if it was like a lifelong thing that you, a guy like that, still is all about that.
I think he's more into just having dinner with Paul Stanley when he's like, and his there son. In the country. Yeah. Seems to happen a lot.
That's what he lives for, huh? Yeah. Just the next Paul Stanley dinner date.
Do you get the feeling that over the years, or maybe he's expressed it, I won't say I know a whole lot. I've read a lot of Jimmy Page interviews over the years, but it seems like it's got to be frustrating after Bonham passed away. He's had some big moments, but not anything near probably what could have happened had Zeppelin kind of, you know, stuck around in some other capacity, some more commercially viable capacity. With new product, that is.
Well, yeah.
Kind of dabbled in that with the Firm. They got a little bit of traction, but he certainly hasn't had the solo career that Robert Plant has. I mean, I know you're not a fan of Robert Plant because of his stance on Dyer Maker or whatever however the fuck you pronounce that, but
he'll tell you.
I mean, that guy has had a consistently quality solo output, in my opinion, and he just, you know, continues to put out new stuff and go in new directions. And just Page was never that really adventurous. He just wanted to stick with the kind of Zeppelin formula. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they had success with that No Quarter reunion, and
that was big. Yeah,
the Coverdale Page thing had a little something going on.
Yeah, remember Gallows Pole was everywhere for a little while.
I mean, he didn't like disappear like Jakey Lee did.
No, but it seems like the narrative, at least, is he's always wanting to get that going, and Plant's like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it would be. So it's a horrible idea now.
It seems
now. I mean, they did that one reunion show at the O2 Arena, which at this point is almost probably 15 years ago, almost. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that, can't remember when that happened. And it was pretty good, but I mean, you know, everything was down-tuned and, you know, tempos were pretty slow, and you know, now they're well into their 70s, so it just wouldn't make any sense at all.
Yeah,
plus Jason's out doing the Led Zeppelin Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience, and he's got that going on.
Paige being like, can I get in on that? No, I don't think so.
No, we're booked.
We got
teams are locked.
We got a guy.
No. Well, he also did that tour where he was in the Black Crowes, and they did all Zeppelin, which is, if you get that live album off Spotify or whatever, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
Why do we need a Zeppelin reunion when we have Train out there?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Jack Russell's Great White is still functioning. That too. So, yeah, you don't need a Zeppelin reunion.
Yeah. That's what Robert Plant says.
He's like, did you see that Kingdom Come show from a couple of years ago?
Yeah, forget it.
What are we going to do?
We can't compete with that. I'm going to do some folk music.
That bass solo?
Yeah. Robert Plant has whenever you hear about him, it's almost like the same kinds of stories you hear people tell about Bill Murray, where it's like, oh, I was at this place, and Robert Plant was there, and he was buying drinks for everyone, and he was like the coolest guy ever. That's all I ever hear about Robert Plant.
So he's a Bill Murray, huh?
But Nick also hates Bill Murray. Another guy Nick hates. But I know I've heard stories like that about Robert Plant, where it's like this odd, you know, out-of-the-way place and some weird city.
I mean, that's like a Dave Grohl sort of a thing. Like, I just read Dave Grohl showed up with a grill or a smoker and fed a bunch of homeless people or something recently, just randomly.
That's nice.
Yeah,
which is showed great. Showed up with a grill.
Which is great, but it's it's just, you know, one of those things if someone told you the story and said, all right, who was it? You probably guess.
Well, our listener, Bev DeVoe, said he showed up at her grocery store, asked her where the coffee was or something like that.
Yeah. You know. He just shows up doing things. That's pretty normal. But
in the 70s, he wouldn't have been able to do that. He would have been completely mobbed. And just like, he was the biggest rock star literally on the planet.
Sure.
And just, you can't function like a normal person in those circumstances, but now he's able to do that.
Yeah, it's got to be better, right?
Oh yeah,
way better, I'm sure. Plus, you know, you got everything you got from that time, and now you can be somewhat normal. Somewhat normal.
Just call Alison Krauss when you need something.
You need to do a duet.
I mean, Mick Jagger did that Instagram video not long ago where he just showed up at that random bar somewhere in Wisconsin or wherever it was, and nobody knew who he was. He was just standing there drinking, and somebody was filming him, and people were milling around him, and nobody knew who he was.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, you know, these aging guys, it just goes to show you that, you know, this stuff where people are like, oh, the younger generation will remember these and revere these guys as much as we have. It's just not happening.
Those people don't look at each other in public anymore.
That's a good point. Yes, they're completely oblivious.
Mick Jagger could be bagging my groceries, and
you wouldn't look,
and I probably would not be looking. Not that there's any.
I've had grocery baggers involuntarily make stranger faces than Mick Jagger. Where I feel uncomfortable and don't look.
It's because of what you bought.
It could be.
It's looks of bewilderment and disgust.
Could be. So I hear where you're coming from. Don't want to acknowledge. Just act like everything's normal, man.
People don't look at each other. So yeah. It's probably a great day to be a rock star.
Yeah.
That's true.
No one's looking at you.
It is nice to have some normalcy in your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I say we get at it here.
All right, let's do it. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with Wanna Make Love.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that it's Jimmy Page at the, you know, like if I'd never heard it, well, I haven't heard it, but if I didn't know who it was, I'd say, okay.
You'd guess it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty, pretty identifiable, I would say.
Mm. It could be Kingdom Come too. That swaggering Zeppelin-esque riff going on. Lick your lips, shake your hips, run your fingers through your hair. You bump and grind, make me lose my mind. Baby, that's so unfair.
This is Jesse James Dupree, or what?
I was thinking that too.
Got that quality.
Wait, he
it.
Hit a couple of those notes. This is like Dick Adrizzi and Paul Di'Anno here. You can't tell them apart.
So are you liking it?
So far, yeah. It's I'm curious as to where it's going to go. Just because of your build up for it. Like I'm expecting, okay, it's pretty standard fare for a rock song. You know, a guy sees a girl and he's describing what she's doing. She's shaking her hips and running her fingers through her hair and everything like that.
Right.
So, pretty standard fare, I would say, so far.
Well, the intensity does build over the course of it. But, you know, a Saturday night, you're looking just right. People all stop and stare. Lick your lips, shake your hips, run your fingers through your hair. It's almost like
it is nice. Take it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you bump and grind, make me lose my mind, baby. That's so unfair. And then you close out the verse. And then we go into the chorus here. You just don't stop. You wind me up.
A little presumptuous on this guy's part.
Well, I mean, if it's like a first date, maybe.
Isn't that might not even be a date. I'm just thinking he's at a club or something.
The bullpen luxury sports
could
bar
be
nearby.
Yeah.
I don't know. It moved pretty quickly here.
Yeah, it moved quickly from him admiring her from a distance to being in the car on the way home.
I'm going to be taking you home now.
Well, he said, you just don't stop. You wind me up. So it's all her fault at this point. But the point is that the man is becoming extremely horny. He's moving from point A to point B very quickly. So
yeah,
definitely a September vibe if I've ever experienced one.
Yeah, and a nice Jimmy Page like a slide, kind of a big guitar slide there. That was nice.
Now, see, I was gonna bring that up, and I will bring it up now. I'll nerd out a little bit guitar wise, but so late '80s was when the brand Paul Reed Smith guitars were starting to get some traction. He had gotten Carlos Santana. I think Nugent was on board at that point. One of the guys in Heart was a big endorser. He was putting out, you know, full page ads in all the guitar magazines, and people were becoming aware of it. So when I saw him live and they did this song, Page busted out a PRS, and in my estimation, the best functioning non-locking tremolo ever invented was by Paul Reed Smith. All of his earliest guitars had them on it. And that's what he was using, just a straight tremolo to,
to
bend it down and then bend it back up. And didn't have all the double locking stuff, just stayed in tune. And that's what he used on stage. And I'm going to guess maybe in the studio. Of course, you never know what somebody uses in the studio versus live. But
really sounded like a slide to me.
Yeah, it was all tremolo, from at least live. So when having seen that live, when I hear it, I just hear like tremolo.
Actually. Yeah, it's probably better to be able to do that than to have a slide on your pinky while you're trying to play other stuff the whole time, just for one part of the song. That always was. It always seemed a little cumbersome.
The pinky slide.
Yeah, I gotta have it on here while I'm playing this other stuff, just for this one moment or for the solo or something like that.
Well, there's occasionally an apparatus on the mic stand where you just hang it back up on there, but you have to make that effort too, so there's a lot going on. Much easier to pull off when you have a guitar with a functioning tremolo system that stays in tune, and that's what he used live when he did this.
Speaking of nerdery, our friend Gavin on our Patreon live chat says, the main riff is a bar of 4-4 and 7-8 repeating. I can't even do that math, but there you go. If you're on that level of music nerdery, there's something for you.
He's talking about the chorus?
I don't know, man.
There was a weird like hesitation moment in the drumming during the chorus. I wasn't really... Well,
Gavin's a drummer.
I wasn't counting or following, but if that's what he's talking about, then yeah, I noticed a little sort of... hiccup almost, it felt like.
Yeah,
and it's basically a song of primal horniness, but apparently it's got some musical sophistication going.
Well, this guy who's singing it, he doesn't want to wait for the full 8 beats. He just 7th beat.
Yeah,
I've had enough. We're going.
He can't hold it till the 8th beat.
No.
And like I said, as we've had in other September selections, the level of arousal begins to build at this point.
7 pumps in.
Yes.
Dressed to kill, dressed to thrill, I guess you know what I mean. Going now, showing now, get your every schoolboy's dream.
So I think you'll agree that some of the intensity picked up a little bit, the pitch of the voice raised up, which is something we've discussed in previous Septembers. When a man becomes horny, the pitch of his voice comes up.
It's a Jay Leno thing.
Either from the pants fitting tighter or just in general, you know, blood flow moving to other parts of the body affects the pitch of the voice. But I think you'll agree that was in play there.
Yeah, definitely there.
And of course, he dropped the, as Nick's favorite word, the schoolboy's dream trope in there that also appears in Loverboy's Notorious, another horny song.
They also say schoolboy's dream?
Yep.
Okay.
Same exact phrase, but... Yeah, dress to kill, dress to thrill. I guess you know what I mean.
I was going to comment on that on that little bit of that I guess you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most intriguing line so far, actually. And then, I guess you know
what
I mean. There's almost an apathy.
You know, whatever.
About that, but not in his delivery, but if you're just reading the words,
well,
I guess.
In the first verse, he felt so confident that he was just going to rush this woman out of there and make sweet love to her. But now there's a little trepidation.
Yeah, there. I guess you know what I mean.
Yeah, and then we've got going out, showing out. You're every boy's, yet you're every schoolboy's dream. You rock, you roll, ooh my soul. You make me want to shout and scream. You never stop. You wind me up. Ooh baby, wait until I get you home.
So I'm just thinking about what a schoolboy's dream is from my life experience. What do you think? The age of the schoolboy would be
a trip to Shakey's buffet.
Yeah, the Pizza Hut talk from earlier. Yeah. Ooh, baby.
That makes me want to shout and scream. Go put a quarter in the chicken egg machine.
Get some piece of garbage toy.
When you first conceived of the chocolate sauce on the telephone receiver bit. Practical jokes, things of that nature.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking, what age do you think we're thinking? I'm trying to think of what a schoolboy's dream would be from my life at whatever age. We're talking high school?
Schoolboy implies some
younger.
Yeah. I would think like middle school, the oldest.
Mm, okay.
I think boys are getting horny at that point. But, but yeah, this is twice in two prominent songs in our universes that... you know, the schoolboy's dream, the schoolgirl outfit, all this weird fixation of, like, preteen horniness. Very strange.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it seems
working on this guy.
It seems that rock and roll is an entire industry, which is defined by arrested development.
Wow. That's a polite way to put it.
Good money in that business, Nick. Or there was, at least.
In Arrested Development?
Yeah, there was.
I think there still is.
I guess so. Never goes away, does it?
No.
So damn hot.
Yeah.
Now, like, yeah.
Yeah, he's gone back. Over a cliff at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's back in the in those jeans territory, I would say.
Yes, big time. And that double time section just got him even more charged up, I think. Which was pretty good. What'd you think of that musically? way they shifted into another gear.
Yeah, I liked it. It's kind of hard to wrap my head around on first listen. I do like what the guitar is doing. It seems like just a lot of those slide type things going on, and just, you know, like a lot of I'm assuming open A, bending the C, A back to the G, kind of like a
Miles is bending the C as he sings this.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he is. See, that's another thing that Page used to have back in the day. He had a Telecaster with the B string bender. It had that thing that it was attached to the strap button. So if you pulled down on the strap, it would raise the pitch of the B string. It was this ridiculous contraption.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's called a B bender. And if you look in the back of a Telecaster with one on there, like the whole back is routed out. And it's this big series of steel bars and springs and stuff. And it's supposed to mimic the sound of a steel guitar. So you pull down on the strap button and it raises the pitch just of the B string, and it gives you like that country like I think the first guy who did it was Graham Parsons of the Byrds. It's that country rock type thing.
So what, just like a half step, whole step?
That much, but just enough to simulate the sound of a lap steel. And the way it worked, you push the guitar down to the neck of the guitar toward the floor, and the tension on the strap button would raise the... You look it up and look how you had to route out at the back of a Telecaster.
I think Nicolas Cage figured that out and found the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, exactly. It's like way more elaborate than it needed to be just for that one effect. But so that's kind of what he had going on. But again, you've got a properly functioning tremolo system, you can sort of simulate that.
Never heard of that. I'd be curious to try that. What is it doing again?
Yeah.
What's the effect?
Yeah, let's read up on it. But
it seems like a really elaborate thing that's not especially useful in a lot of circumstances.
No, there's definitely a better way to... Better mousetrap was built over the years for something like that. But and then he also kicked in some wah pedal on those heavier chords in the up-tempo section. So, you know, from a playing standpoint, Page is definitely on point here. So is Jason. I mean, the drumming is great.
Yeah, that's true.
Production's great. Drums sound good. Mr. Miles bending the C is definitely out front and sounding good. So, and he's gotten so damn hot at this point. So he's about to deliver some other pretty fun lyrics here.
That's kicking it up a notch from the B-52's Hot Pants, where Fred says, "Never seen anything so darn hot."
Does he say "darn"?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Hot Pants to the next level. So.
All right.
That was a nice little section.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Nice little repetitive groove going on there.
Yeah, tons of swagger. I mean, if you know, there, if there was a dictionary definition of cock rock, this would have to be on the list. I mean, it's,
yeah, it is,
it's
right?
It's just what this song is all about, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you would... Page and Plant just went in such different directions with their solo careers, which of Page's consists of the Death Wish soundtrack and this, but... Yeah.
Plant was in the Honey Drippers, so...
Yeah, there's that, but, I mean, you know, Plant was the one delivering these kind of lyrics and this kind of persona on stage, so this is more of like a song you would have expected him to put out in his solo career, but he definitely... went a little more, well, a lot more highbrow with his solo material. And this one is, I don't know, I mean, you expect the swagger from Page, but just this so overtly cock rock song was a little kind of startling coming from him, but, you know, ended up loving it. It was definitely a highlight of the live set. It was pretty awesome when they busted this one out. So do you think he's gotten the message across yet that he's going to make sweet love to this woman? That's probably, what, the 20th time he said it at this point?
At least.
Well, it's about halfway home from that standpoint. So that's the other funny thing about it. It's just the make sweet love to you line comes at you about 40 times in this song. Hmm.
What do you? That's another thing. The phrase "sweet love" is something that's kind of been said to death. What does it mean, sweet love? Just like very affectionate, very like I don't think of that as being like animalistic.
Yeah, you know? You don't associate sweet love with someone who's been made so damn hot.
Yeah,
at
yeah.
that point. So yeah, there is a bit of a disconnect.
Yeah,
I think on paper. Yes, but the way this guy's saying it,
mm-hmm.
it's there's. I don't think there's anything gentle about it.
No, you think he's lying?
I think he's saying whatever he has to.
Yeah,
has to say.
I was thinking of that. We've said that on some other song analysis, but with where the horny protagonist will. Change direction on a dime based on how he's gauging the yeah. woman's reaction.
Yeah, oh yeah. That was...
So like he's conveying the fact that he's just horny beyond belief, but then he's implying that there's going to be some tenderness and some genuine affection when the lovemaking begins. So he's trying to cover all his bases, yeah, basically.
He's haggling at this point.
He's laying all the cards out of the table and seeing which one is going to get picked up. Not a bad strategy, but it's, you know, when you put all of it out there, you're just trying to cast that wide net and hoping something resonates.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was a
little adventure.
Yeah, that was some cool note choices going on.
Yeah, that's the thing. He was actually doing some interesting stuff in the 80s. The Firm is another one of those bands that I kind of go back and forth on over the years. Sometimes I listen to them, it hasn't aged very well. Other times I listen to it and I really like it. And, just his approach to soloing just changed so much in the 80s to become maybe more contemporary, but it's definitely not a solo you would imagine on any Zeppelin album in the 70s, but he took his playing to a different dimension in the 80s, and more often than not, I listen back to the Firm stuff, and I'm in favor of it. I mean, I was really into it when it came out, and then over the years it didn't age well for me, but I'm back on that bandwagon. I mean, there's definitely some interesting stuff going on, the fretless bass happening, and you know, it was pretty adventurous, and not just cookie cutter Zeppelin Redux stuff that he was doing.
Nick, what do you think?
I'm trying to think of what to compare it to. That solo was very unique. Just it had some, you know, like Jimmy Page-isms that, you know, are also subsequently Ace Frehley-isms, you know, like just like the sort of bend, yeah, rock, hard rock bending kind of patterns that you hear. But it was really unique, like the note choices and just I don't know. So okay, the thing you hear all the time, Jimmy Page is a sloppy player. That's the word you always hear. Hmm. Don't know if that's true, or if he's just kind of, if he's doing it actually with precision, but he's making it lay back a little bit, because I detected that in the solo too. Like this wasn't like a, you know, I don't know who would be like an absolute precision lead player.
Satriani maybe?
Perhaps someone like that who just
yeah
technical, very exactly on the beat.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't that, but it makes me question whether that's a lack of ability, which people seem to want to paint Jimmy Page with. It seems like it's on purpose.
Yeah, there was never a lack of ability on his part. It's just a combination of you know, really going for it and taking chances. And then the other thing is that can't be denied is just the man was whacked out on heroin a lot of times. I mean, you watch the Song Remains the Same concert movie, and you know, that's another one that people point to the sloppiness, but he's just blasted on heroin. I mean, how precise are you going to be when you're under the influence like that? And, you know, he was not in great shape in the 80s. He was, you know, I think cocaine had entered the picture. And, you know, he was not a sober guy in the 80s. Hmm. But,
so yeah. For the Song Remains the Same film, did they just, yeah, we're recording this, right? I mean,
pretty much it, yeah.
It's, I mean, it's like, hey, a lot of money and preparation went into this. You're completely geeked out. We don't like. We're still recording.
Oh, it's a show.
Yeah, we're not.
Yeah, and
we put the deposits down already.
They acknowledge it's like it was nowhere near the best concerts of the tour, but that's when they wanted to film at Madison Square Garden, and
yeah,
and they had the film crew there, and but it's not like you can tell a heroin addict, okay, tonight don't use heroin, because we got a film crew. He just went out and did his thing, and. Yeah. I mean, there's some charm and appeal to it from that standpoint. It's cool in its own way, but if you're expecting like this precision, you know, technically flawless performance, certainly from Page, you're not going to get it. I mean, you rarely got it on stage live. Like I said, when I saw him on this tour, he was fucked up, man. He was just drooling down the front of himself, but me standing four rows from him, as far as I could tell, he was nailing everything. It was just watching him, you were just like, is this guy just going to topple over at any point or what? But he just kept, same thing when I saw Ace at the Avalon. He had to be carried into the venue and propped up on stage, and they put his guitar over him, and for the next 2 hours, he proceeded to nail every song. But he was completely shit-faced.
Wow.
Absolutely shit-faced.
Not the case anymore.
No, not that
he's
bad.
Sober, but he's sober and he has no idea how the songs go.
Right. It's like the complete opposite, which is weird. But, I'm glad you guys enjoyed that solo, because I do think his playing, he didn't put out a lot of stuff in the 80s. It was two Firm albums, the Death Wish thing and this. But he was taking his playing to a different dimension that was more contemporary than what he was doing in the 70s. So he still had that sense of adventure going on. Don't make sweet love.
thought I heard that window breaking from Chris's intro.
Could be in there.
It really sounded like it. Some sort of frequencies came together there, and it sounded like glass breaking. it's weird. It's a little weird the way that they're. I'm assuming this is like a long outro, just kind of. It's going to keep repeating this. It's kind of weird that it's got the big stop though every time.
Yeah.
Instead of just like a continuous groove out, mm-hmm. It's like groove. Okay, like let's hold this for a few seconds before we move on to the next section, which is the same as the previous.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of issues you could have with the arrangement. First of all, it's like, do we really need "I'm Gonna Make Sweet Love to You" delivered 60 times in the song? And that one, I mean, you guys liked it, but that one instrumental break where there was no, like, technically lead guitar going on, was just a rhythm. You could have trimmed that out. And, I mean, not necessarily that this would have been a successful single, but you could have, this song is, what, 5 and change?
5:20, yeah.
You could have gotten it almost to 3 minutes if you just tightened up the arrangement.
Yeah, but, I would say so.
Yeah.
But nobody's telling Jimmy Page what to do.
Probably not, and nor are you telling John Miles what to do when he's got a visible erection. You just get out of his way and let him do whatever he's gonna do.
Yeah. All right, we've only got a few more seconds. So, okay. Yeah, about 20, so let's play it up. It's a big ending. I didn't expect that. I thought it would just fade.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, nice ending there. It finally came to a close. But, yeah, there it is.
They probably debated fading it in the studio. Just that we're going to play it this way and we'll fade it at some point, and then they just didn't.
See, that's the thing. Like, you never know how a song actually ends when they did a fade out, but yeah. Like you said, they probably were going to fade it, but then when they heard how they ended it, they're like, that was pretty cool. We'll leave that on.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe we keep that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Chris, you brought this song to the show. It's your turn to vote Sweet Surrender or Kick in the Crotch.
I'm sweet surrendering it for sure.
It's Sweet Surrender. Hell yes.
I mean, just the extreme level of cock rock from, you know, Mr. Aleister Crowley guy is just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of funny to me. I mean, there was always that element of Zeppelin music, but this is like taking it to that 80s Sunset Strip full-on cock rock level. It's kind of funny to have that as the second track on a Jimmy Page solo album, and the vocal delivery and the "gets me so damn hot" line just crack me up. And you know, it is a song of extreme horniness and fits the theme, and yeah, maybe I oversold it, but I felt pretty good about it, and I always enjoy that song when it comes up on shuffle.
Nick,
I'm gonna give it a sweet surrender as well.
It's Sweet Surrender. Hell yes.
Yeah, it was interesting in the sense that it's Jimmy Page, and there's obviously a very Zeppelin-y groove going on, but then you've got the weird 7/8 thing happening every once in a while to kind of throw you off, which I don't know that it was necessary. it's fine that it's in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for this type of song it's necessary. You don't hear too many songs with any sort of prog element. Not that this is a huge prog element, but
yeah,
you don't really hear "Gonna Make Sweet Love to You" repeated ad nauseum in that type of setting. You know, it's mostly like "Turn It On Again" or something like that. You know, you throw in like an extra beat, like Genesis pulls off stuff like that.
Yeah, prog music, King Crimson.
Yeah, it's just, and even in like a more a pop sound, Like, yeah. You know, like the, like even, you know, during the Phil Collins lead vocal era, you would still get that, but it's
right.
It's kind of out of place here, but I don't really mind it. But it is interesting also that, yeah, like I was going to say some of the stuff Chris actually said, where it really seems to have, it's Zeppelin, but it's a mix of that and like your typical like slut metal Headbangers Ball sort of, you know, like a lot of stuff they would play on Headbangers Ball back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, it's pretty interesting to hear the two worlds colliding like that. Not that they're two worlds that far apart, but an album I'd never heard of. I didn't know that this sort of a thing existed from Page.
Yeah.
And vocal, I thought the vocals were delivered great.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I don't know anything about this vocalist besides just that he's on this. But
yeah, it doesn't really have a ton of other notable stuff other than that hit single he had in the 70s. But yeah,
other than just it, you could have Jesse James Dupree step in for him. It sounds like,
yeah, that would work. Okay, my turn to vote. I'm giving it a sweet surrender.
Oh. It's sweet surrender.
John Miles, great voice. I'm curious to check out whatever that hit song, what was it called? I Hear Music or something? Something like that, whatever the hell it was called.
Are we talking about Freddie Mercury?
What? It's a kind of magic? I don't know.
No, I can hear music when he had that alias.
Oh, no, I don't know. Whatever, we said he had a hit song in 1976. I don't remember what it was called. I think
it was just called Music, right? Yeah. Wasn't that what he said?
I think it just said he did music in 1976.
Some untitled form. Music.
Yeah, but I'm curious to hear what he had going on, what his style was, you know, for his solo.
I would look up more stuff from this guy.
that surprises me. I thought you guys were going to be a little more mocking of it and put off by it, but I'm actually pleasantly surprised that you seem to actually enjoy it from a musical standpoint.
Yeah, and then honestly, I didn't even notice bass playing, but didn't. Register. I mean, he's just doing his job. Yeah. Whoever's doing it. Drumming is fine, but not exceptional to me. But again, it didn't need to be. But
yeah, just, I guess there's just that little bit of a prog element that you could blow this.
Like, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's there.
That to me seems to be the whole thing going on with the drumming in this song.
Sure. It sounds like I'm being a dick. I'm not trying to. I'm just saying those were not standouts. They did their job, which is what they're supposed to do. But those couple of sections, I guess you call them solos, but they were like, I don't know, musical interludes. I don't know what they were, because it wasn't just like, you know, a traditional solo. But those two sections that there were pretty cool and attention grabbing and unexpected, and probably part of the reason why the song's 5 minutes and 20 seconds instead of 3 minutes and whatever, 20 seconds.
Right.
But cool. So. Those are my favorite parts of the song. And then the so damn hot thing. Just a little bit, you know, the horny vibe on the vocal delivery was there for sure. So that combined with what Jimmy Page is doing, cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised by this reaction from you both.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I thought
I thought you were going to be just rolling your eyes at the 50th time he says, I'm going to make sweet love to you. And
I mean, the phrase sweet love did get to me, as I kind of pointed out. But I think that's also just because you hear it constantly whenever someone's making some kind of joke.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to make sweet love. Like, it's always those
like
two words together.
That's an Ashley Schaefer kind of dialogue that you would hear. But yes, I hear what you're saying.
I'm tired of hearing those two words together. I'm not tired of the activity of sweet love, but I'm tired of hearing those two words together.
Well, especially juxtaposed with some of the other sentiments that were delivered in the verses.
Yeah.
Well, I would say Sweet Love by the Commodores pulls it off.
I'll have to listen. I don't know what.
Yeah, that's. I'd recommend that one.
More of a Machine Gun Man myself.
I figured you would. Yeah.
All right, look where we found ourselves.
I got a question for you.
Paul Stanley wants to know if want to make love. is a rock and roll boner as voted by the three rock and roll boners in this room. Most Paul doing an 88 smashes, thrashes, and hits. He was going a whole different boner direction. Well, I guess it's not that big of a whole different direction, but more explicitly horny. 1988 must have been a horny time, huh?
It was a horny time. I was pretty horny back then.
Yeah.
It was middle of my college career, so yeah.
Peak horniness? Maybe not peak.
I would hope. I would still on the upswing, I would like to think.
That's good.
No, it was a good college is a good time to be horny. You're supposed to be horny in college.
Nobody told me.
Didn't get that memo. Huh?
No, I didn't have a good counselor in high school. They didn't tell me when I was supposed to apply for schools. They didn't tell me I was supposed to be horny. They didn't tell me any of that.
They didn't tell you to apply for school?
They didn't tell me anything. I didn't even apply for school until after I graduated.
Yeah,
no one told me to do anything.
What are they doing over there at Bishop Knoll?
Yeah, same here.
I'm not blaming anyone because part of this should have been me observing what was happening around me and being proactive, but no one told me to do anything.
Yeah, but that's what the counselor's job is.
Yeah, but like no one in my life, I forgive everyone for it, but no one in my life told me to do any of these things. Maybe they just thought
your counselor
kick
didn't,
the bucket.
So your counselor didn't reach you, is what you're saying.
No.
You're too busy in the hallway trying to fuck the other teacher, I think was the problem.
That's it. Yeah. They told me to be a bus driver. That was it. They thought I was a shit for brains. So
Did they seriously say that?
Yeah, they did.
Okay, that's not good. That's not what they're supposed to say.
Might still do it. I'm not sure. I'm not saying if you're a bus driver, you're a shit for brains, but when you're a teenager and you're shooting for the stars, you think you would tell the kid, dream bigger and maybe land on bus driver, right?
How big are you supposed to dream in high school?
I don't know. I mean, that's a fun time because you haven't learned how not good you are at certain things and how not connected or not lucky you are. You can pretend you're going to be whatever you want to pretend.
Yeah, I did my career report on being a musician. I remember our teacher was like, yeah, that's probably not going to pan out for you. You should come up with a plan B. I'm like, yeah, okay. But
most
I did.
Didn't say that.
In sophomore year, I did my, that was my, you know, pick your career and do a report on it. I did musician.
Yeah.
So.
What would yours have been?
Not you. Sophomore year, probably musician
of senior, high school.
Yeah, probably senior year. I don't know. Horse's ass. Changed a little bit.
Professional.
Yeah. Rodeo clown or something. I don't know.
Horse's ass. So he's one half of a duo in a horse costume.
Professionally.
Kids parties and rodeos and whatnot.
I would have joined the horse costume union.
Yeah,
done it right.
The tail gunner of the horse costume.
Yeah. Well, you, Nick.
Realistically?
No. No, okay. It doesn't have to be realistic.
But no, at that point in my life, what would I have said?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I was already aware that musician was out of the
like professional career.
Yeah,
musician
that was not in the cards. I think I knew that already.
Hmm.
I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. How about that for my answer?
Same here.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
So I have no
50
idea.
Fucking six. I better figure it out pretty quickly here.
Yeah.
But one thing I do know is my vote is in for this right. round. So
Nick?
Yes, my vote is in.
Mm. Mm.
Did you have any of that cake, Andy?
I did. It's quite good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's one of your best efforts.
Andy hasn't been eating the stuff, really. Not when I'm bringing things.
Nick made a big deal out of it.
I told our mom. Andy's not eating.
You got to watch him. There was a bite left of the treat last week. Nick noticed
something's wrong.
And there was gossip going around about me not eating.
I didn't know it got around.
Andy's anorexic.
Yeah, because I left one bite.
I said, I think something's wrong.
He's anorexic, yet he's gaining weight.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm doing that.
Yeah. It's kind of like a horse isn't finishing its bag.
That's true. Something's wrong.
What's wrong?
Yeah. Well, the Indiana Beef Daddy will finish this whole treat today, so don't worry.
Yeah, it was damn good, man. Tip of the cap to you on that one. That's got to easily top three.
Wow.
Every baked treat you've ever brought out here. Yeah. Is there a name to it? Did we have a name for it?
Or was just I don't know. It's just
pumpkin
like a
cheesecake swirl.
It's just
loaf
like a
butt. whatever. Loaf butt come into the
loaf butt is good.
Okay. Let's see. Officially, the recipe I looked at was cream cheese filled pumpkin bread.
I like pumpkin butt loaf. Yeah. Pumpkin loaf butt or whatever better.
Whatever that was. Butt laying bread. Butt laying's favorite dessert.
Pumpkin butt loaf. I'm liking that. PBL for sure.
I'd order. If you walked into some cafe and that was on the menu as a special, I'm getting it.
Yep. So am I. Yep. It's a no-brainer.
How much is the pumpkin butt loaf, please?
How fresh is the pumpkin butt loaf today?
When did it come out?
Pumpkin butt loaf. All right.
That's going to be in a Pot Against Humanity card. I can see it now.
Yep.
All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
What's the order there, Mr. Producer? Me, Nick, you?
Sure. Perfect.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
Rock.
I can't do it. Sorry.
Out the window.
A lot of good stuff about it, though. Oh, Nick. But I couldn't take it to the next one.
Mm. Maybe it'll grow on you.
Fuck you, Nick!
Hell no! Trash ass
Nick! Fuck you, Nick!
Yeah, well, I deserve it.
Wait, what? There's a new one entering the arena.
Get the fuck out of here, little Nick. Take that dumb shit with you.
I missed the first part of that. What did he say?
He said, get the fuck out of here, little Nick.
See?
Still refuse to use that one I gave you from Basic Instinct. Do I have to resend it?
You might have to resend it. I don't know. Okay.
I could punch it up in my phone, but I'll just send it to you, and we can add it to the list of disparaging Nick drops. You can never have too many of those.
Yeah, I mean, that's a trend that...
Yeah,
that
you might have to ramp that world up like the Andy themes. The fuck you, Nick sound bites.
Yeah, the world is ready for that to be a trend.
I think so. But yeah, if you feel like delving back into the little more into that Outrider album, and you can get past your hatred of Robert Plant, the song he does with him on here is pretty fucking great.
Okay,
pretty high energy, nice collaboration. When you know that was 8 years after Bonham died, and it was like people had pretty much resigned themselves that they weren't gonna work together again. When that came out, it was pretty people were pretty stoked about it.
Well, if you disagree with us, we're sorry.
That's just the fucking way it is.
Deal with it. It's that fun time of the show where we try to figure out what's going on between Nick's ears over there.
You mean the rhythmic slapping section?
Rhythmic slap, 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 slapping. So, last week's clue.
We had a couple of guesses.
Yeah?
All of them wrong.
Ah, come on, guys and gals. What's the deal?
All wrong.
All right, well, let's find out what the correct answer is.
Pete
Bitches and Regalia.
Off the Hot Rats album.
No one guessed that?
Nobody. Kind of nonsense.
Bad guesses, huh?
Terrible guesses.
And they all seem to be guessing the same song.
They all had the same wrong guess.
That's weird. Well, nobody won a new car this week.
No.
But there's always next week.
Yeah, do you have a new one?
We do. Are you ready for the clue for next week? Here we go. Let's find out what it is. I feel like I've heard that before. Once more, please. Okay.
There you have it.
So get your guesses in for next week. We are giving away
when the Peaches and Regalia music started up, I could hear the reactions to Nick from people
they must have been delighted.
Well, we have sound clips of them
already.
You would play them.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm. Hell no! Trash ass.
Fuck you, Nick.
Keep the fuck out of here, little Nick. Take that dumb shit with you.
Oh, well.
I'll send you that other one. You got to add it to the rotation.
We'll keep trying.
Yep. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Yardo questions.
Peaches and Regalia.
Oh, yards of questions.
Motherfucker, I give them.
Swing away.
Yes, chief.
Welcome.
I promise, not necessarily this week's clue for next week. Next week's clue, though, for the drum intros,
mm-hmm.
I promise an easy one.
Okay.
Many people will get it right. Maybe not for the solution next week, but the one after that.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, you do have to throw people a bone every now and then. Otherwise, they're going to lose interest.
It's going to be easy.
I mean, you already hear how angry they are, calling you a trash ass and other stuff like that. It's only going to get worse.
Unbelievable. What's with you people?
Mm-hmm. All right. This week's Yardo Questions comes to us from Styx Hooligan.
Okay.
Styx Hooligan.
I don't think I'm familiar with this individual.
Me neither.
It's got to be the name on his birth certificate. I'm convinced of that.
Yeah. Could be. The son of Peter Criss, maybe.
Does Peter Criss have any kids?
I don't know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I read his book and I can't remember.
Yeah,
he didn't really talk too much about family.
He talked about growing up and that's about it, right?
Yeah, it was... if there wasn't anything salacious to say about it, it might not be in that book.
It didn't have anything to do with a wanting mouth. It didn't make it into the pages of the autobiography.
Absolutely, absolutely, pun intended, out of control.
Yeah,
that individual.
Did you see that video of him that came up the other day where he's playing with some swing band?
Yeah, that was good.
I hate to say that, but I was watching and I was thinking, this is the most dignified member of KISS somehow. How has this happened? Based on who he was?
Man.
Yeah.
Life is not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Yeah.
As long as you're still sucking air, you have the opportunity to redeem yourself.
Yeah.
And it's not like he was like unbelievable in that clip, but I was, you know, I'm watching his hands and stuff. I'm like,
yeah, he was wailing on that hi-hat too. He was showing a little flash back there.
Pretty
a little,
sweet move that
like
he had.
Buddy Rich-isms.
Yeah.
He had that.
He's 70 fucking 7, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how that's welcome to the KISS world, right?
Right.
He has one daughter, Jenna Lee, born in 1981, according to Wikipedia.
Okay. Get her on the phone.
So if this guy is in fact the son of Peter Criss, we've got quite a scoop here on the show for once.
All right. It says three whats. Okay.
Okay.
Here's what it says. Question one. What classic rock song can you still listen to all the way through, even though you've heard it a million times?
That's a good one. So I'm going to have to... I don't have it yet, but I'm thinking, okay, this has got to be a radio hit.
Yeah.
Just I'm giving myself that parameter. See, there's one that I've mentioned before. I don't know if it's... I guess I can recycle it. I want to come up with a different one, though. I'll say the one that I've said before that I can listen to every time.
Okay.
And that's Panama.
Mm. Is that... That's classic rock now, huh?
Oh, are you kidding? That's a...
Yeah,
I guess it
that's
is.
That's almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's the thing. Right around mid-80s is when the classic rock format was coming out, and like those two avenues didn't cross paths back then. But,
you figure rock and roll was what dates back to probably late 40s.
Yeah.
So it's more than halfway... Well, it's about the midway point of rock and roll at this point, the 1984 album.
I think in those terms all the time, so I get what you're saying. So my vote would be, popped into my head first, we had a brief discussion about this amongst ourselves on the chat, where we were talking about like that meme where it's the guy listed like the Beatles, Pink Floyd, The Doors, one other band, Zeppelin, I think, and just said they all suck. Or
They're old people.
Yeah,
music.
Old people music.
Yeah.
And I was like, the band of those four that I find the most interesting is The Doors, and I would say that L.A. Woman never gets old to me. I mean, I think that's a triumphant piece of music, and just the whole vibe of the song and the twists and turns and the arrangement of it and the playing is just brilliant. I never get sick of that one.
And since I've mentioned Panama before, I thought of another one. And that's Back in the Saddle.
Good one, yeah.
I think I said this before. I'm going to do it again. If somebody asked me for a compilation of like the greatest hard rock songs, you could fill a CD or whatever, track one would be Back in the Saddle for me. That's what opens up that collection.
Not a bad selection at all. That's as nasty as Aerosmith has ever gotten, and it's one of their big hits, so yeah, good call.
Question two. What one song do you associate with one or both of your parents? That's an interesting question.
What song?
These are good questions. These are good. So far. You know, my parents had a pretty fucking awesome vinyl collection. I wish I had retained that after my... Dad passed away and we moved my mom here, and we did it was back in the Detroit area, so I had to handle this shit from afar. So I had a friend of mine arrange a estate sale, and they sold everything, and my biggest regret is not grabbing their vinyl collection, because they had a real eclectic variety of music on vinyl, all like vintage, like albums originally pressed and purchased in like the early to mid 60s. And so I would say of all the stuff they had, the one that I associate with them most would be the Age of Aquarius by the Fifth Dimension. They had a lot of that. I don't even know what genre you'd say that would be. Soul, I guess.
But is that from a musical?
I think it's from Godspell or was it or whatever. Like,
because I know they did it on an episode of Head of the Class.
Yeah,
it's like, weird. I think they did that.
It's like Age of Aquarius, and then it went into Let the Sun Shine In.
Yeah,
I think is a medley. But they had like several Fifth Dimension albums. They had like a lot of Dionne Warwick in there. A lot of that kind of like 60s soul music. And yeah, I would say probably had about 50 albums in their collection. I wish I had those.
Nick?
For my mom, I would say, just off the top of my head, the, I'm trying to think of what the lead track is off of the Chicago Christmas album from the 90s. I think it's,
I know what you're talking about, yeah. I don't know the name of it, but...
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look up the initial track, but...
Little Drummer Boy, I think.
Was that the first one?
I think so. I might be lying. Look it up.
Look it up!
I'm gonna have to look at the track list, but... Well, really, that whole album. And the band Chicago, of course, you know.
Yeah.
That's always been my mom's favorite, so... And I'm gonna look up the Christmas one, but while I'm doing that, for my dad, I have distinct memories of Saturday mornings going to get donuts, getting in the pickup truck and going to get donuts. And the song I'll always associate with that, Elvira by the Oak Ridge Boys.
There you go.
Okay.
Always. That's, I mean, there are many more, but that one in particular. And actually, the bakery we used to go to was Elmira's.
So, did you sing Elmira?
So you know that happened, yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, and question three. What is the logic of not letting your listeners hear the song choices as they come up on the Bozo Pewter?
You mean the rejected ones, obviously?
Yeah, I think that's what he's getting at.
I don't know, to add some intrigue and just in general to, you know, really not, you know, because we throw them back in the pile, we keep them on the list, so I mean, I guess maybe to not influence somebody else's selections if they were to come up for them again, but I think mainly just it's an air of intrigue, really.
Yeah.
And we gotta have some mystery on this show. Everybody knows what the song is when they open up the episode, so I mean, that's sort of the only way we can introduce that into the proceedings, I think.
You know, last week on the live chat for the Patreon members who are in that tier, I told them what every song was.
Did you really?
I let them know. They asked. I said, you know what? You're here. The check cleared.
Yeah,
you get answers to those questions.
There you
questions.
Go. There's a perk of... and there you go. Upselling is another motivation behind it. That's a good one. I didn't think of that. Yep. Yeah.
So... Obviously not.
Nick, any other input there? Other than it's not anybody's fucking business.
Exactly what I would have said.
Yeah. Without the F word in there.
With like three of them.
Not anybody else's trash ass business.
I remember, this might have been a year or two ago, I tried starting a thing and didn't catch on. Go figure. I thought, we can expose the individuals who submitted that and shame them. We won't say what the song is, but we could say shame on you, whomever.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It goes back to what I said earlier, whereas you might pick something, and it comes up for you, and you hate it. But you throw it back in the pile, somebody else gets it, and they might like it. So,
yeah.
You know. And I don't know if it's ever happened I don't think it ever has to me where there's a song I've rejected and then later have chosen it's come again. I don't think so.
That's never happened to me.
No.
Either.
But I bet
a repeat?
I bet it will. Or were you it came up once and you rejected it and then it came up again and then you said, all right.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's happened, but
it could now.
It certainly could.
Yeah.
And that's a result of, yeah, like we're not because it's almost like you're retiring the song if you say what it is.
Yeah. And something else that's never happened is like I've never rejected a song and then had one of you guys pick it, like with the song reveal, be like, oh yeah, I rejected that maybe 6 months ago. That's never happened
that's
either.
Interesting that that hasn't happened somehow through all these episodes.
I honestly say it's not happened certainly to me, so
yeah. Alrighty, well, thank you for listening to the first episode of 2023 September. We will be back next week with whose pick? Nick's pick?
No, of course.
Is it my pick?
No, I just picked last week.
I can't remember. I don't even remember whose pick it was today.
You're supposed to steal my pick. Yeah,
my brain just goes. What happens in this room is just it's wiped clean for some reason when I walk back outside.
That's everything every day at this point.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's the other fun thing about when people bring up stuff from the podcast, especially if it's a few weeks out or years out.
Or it's the, like,
don't even remember it.
Yeah.
It's fun to relive it.
That's why I enjoyed that AI synopsis.
Oh, because it gave us a recap?
Yeah. It was, and plus it got things wrong, which is, that's the best part that I can tell, at least from my gatherings about AI, is the errors. The entertainment in the errors.
The supreme confidence in delivering information, but being completely wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like my name was Nick Fulick or something like that.
Yeah. Nick Fulick, and I was Andy America.
Andy America. So that's...
And then, I think there was only one Chris. I think it combined the two of you.
Well, we are essentially one of the same.
Yeah, I think it said like Chris Al's band Fozzy or something like that.
Now, I didn't get invited to Wembley, so I don't know what happened there.
Man, you got franchised with the regional gigs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
Oh, well. All right, we'll be back next week with more September.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is September.